me officially welcome everyone to another Fresh Fiction Video Book Club. I'm Samantha T, and today's guest is the fabulous Lisa Gardner, here to talk about her latest book, Still See You Everywhere, the master of psychological thrillers. So good to see you, Lisa.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Samantha.
Well, Lisa, let's start off easy. We've got a lot of your fans online tonight, but for those who are new to you, take us back. How did you first get started writing? And tell us a little bit about your day-to-day activities.
Oh, fun. So I first started writing when the dinosaurs roamed the earth and there are people etching things in stone. Now, it was 30 years ago, which by publishing years, I'm pretty sure it's like, you know, at least several generations. But wrote my first book when I was 17, was very, very fortunate, and sold it when I was 20. So happy this is working, because it is my, you know, only employable skill. But love books. Grew up reading, grew up very active in a library programs with my grandmother. Kind of led me to thinking, wow, if only I could write a novel. And so I tried, I did. And many, many revisions later, sold that novel. And now 30 years later, we have Still See You Everywhere. And it's definitely been a journey.
You were a real overnight success, right, with that first novel?
Yeah, 10 years later, I was, actually. Yeah, no, I sold the very first novel. What I tell people is, though, I mean, not to, like, retire or anything like that. I sold that very first novel, and that meant I could buy a computer, which was fun, because up until that point, I was actually a college student, and I was at the dorms, and I was writing a lot of incredible sex and violence in the computer laboratory, where, you know, other students could stand right behind me and read it, and sometimes actually did. So it was nice when I had my own computer to work on.
Well, and I remember that your first books were actually romantic suspense. How did you make that transition from a romantic suspense to the more psychological thrillers that we know you from today?
I think those dovetail really well. In romantic suspense, what I appreciate about this, and it's myself, it's Tess Gerritsen, Sandra Brown, Iris Johansson, Nora Roberts, a bunch of us come from that background. In the romance world, who matters more than the what? So that's a good training ground for character. And I'm still, to this day, a character-motivated writer, which then when you start having ideas for bigger plots, works out really well, particularly, as you're saying, because it's psychological suspense. And we all cut our teeth with the who matters the most. I mean, otherwise in a thriller, I mean, you just have people running around and almost dying and serial killers trying to chase them. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you are not committed to who, and do they survive, and what are their dynamics and what makes them function, it's just another novel. And I'd like to think us, those of us from that romantic suspense background, that's what we bring to the table. You're going to love our characters first, and then you're really, really, really going to worry about them when they, you know, almost die 100 times.
And I think that's so true, because the characters bringing us in, and especially over series, we're so tied to them and we want to find out what's happening. And even if the storyline might not be the greatest, it's like, oh no, we have to stick with these characters. We're always hoping for the best. But what you also have is the villain in a lot of these books. And so rather than always the romantic pairing, in another book, I think it was The Storytellers, I read that you were talking about that relationship between your hero and the villain is that cat and mouse game. And you invest so much time in the cat being the hero or the heroine, you've got to have that good mouse. What is it like in developing that awesome villain that also has us so invested?
I'm not going to lie, a good villain is fun. Maybe possibly the best part of my life. Still See You Everywhere begins with a female serial killer, totally unrepentant. She has killed 18 men and fed them to her pigs. Don't eat bacon and read this book, let me tell you. And some people are like, how can you write that? I'm like, are you kidding? How can you not? She's the most fun. I mean, she's that, she's had a terrible life. I mean, one of the things that's always interested me seriously is just, what is the nature of evil? I think we all come to suspense and we're all interested in reading suspense, watching crime shows, because we're all trying to answer this question. And myself, I have the opportunity to talk to FBI profilers and law enforcement and all this kind of people, and they will tell you there are many answers to this question, but a lot has to do with the cycle of violence. And when you look at someone like Still See You Everywhere and, you know, serial killer that starts that whole book, she grew up in violence. You could be predator or you could be prey. And at a certain point, she decided she would never be prey again. And I think that not only makes her fun to write, but I think as a reader, you get that. If those were your only two choices in life, maybe you'd butcher 18 men and feed them to pigs. I don't want to judge, but I mean, that's all you have to work with. Your choices get to be a little different.
And she's, and not to give things away, because this happens also very early in the book, she's so unrepentant about it. Like, yes, this is just what it is.
Yeah. I mean, and I do a lot of work now with at-risk kids and social situations, which, again, if you talk to law enforcement, I mean, they'll all tell you, if we spent more money at our kids in the first 5 years, wouldn't have to spend so much later on. But the cycle of violence is real. It is a huge indicator of future behavior. And again, when you start talking about people with these really abusive pasts, and also in the case of, okay, it's the beautiful butcher and Still See You Everywhere. I mean, there's DNA there too. I mean, she's her all of her past is relatives, including her father, are extremely violent personalities. So, of course, that's also her sweet spot for how to deal with the world. And I mean, for most of us who are writers, readers, that's not how we would do things, but that's why it's so much fun to read about it, right? I mean, you know, the total opposite personality of our own.
But Frankie is also fairly flawed. And she's a wanderer. She is a constantly struggling, recovering alcoholic, and trying to find missing people as she's going through everything. It's not a walk in the park. So normally I would ask, you know, how are you balancing those two different sides? But with Frankie also flawed, and she's got some funny moments. I'm laughing out loud at some of the scenes in this book early on. How do you keep that right measure of those lightness elements with her, but still walking in the dark in some cases, along with your villain? Do you have to get a different mindset for each?
My sense of suspense is you can be as dark as you want to be. And I think I'm not going to lie, and I think my fans know, I go dark. I go very, very dark. And you can, as long as there's hope. So if the beautiful butcher is, my life was hopeless and all I had was violence, and now I am violence because all I had was violence. Well, when you talk to law enforcement, they will tell you that right there is the psychology of the predator or of the person that's arrested. The separation now becomes Frankie, which is, my life was really hard too. I mean, her father was drunk the whole time. Her mother was gone the whole time. But it's not violence for her. Now she's looking to solve problems. That hope, we read suspense, in my personal opinion, for hope. That this world, people's relationships, the things that happen to all of us are enormously complex. And certainly in a suspense novel, the worst case scenario. But there's a solution to it all. And that's what Frankie is. She's hope. I mean, she's broken, she's flawed, she's struggling herself, but she never gives up on having the answer or finding the answer. And that to me is the balancing force in all of this.
And does that become your beacon when you are in your writing process? Because I know you're more of a pantser versus a plotter. So is that one of those things? Oh, but I've got to keep that element of hope out there.
Absolutely. And I tease people all the time. You know, murder, suspense, it's logistics. I mean, that's how crime happens. It's a matter of logistics. And if you interview enough cops, and again, I've been at this 30 years, how do you catch criminals? Logistics. I mean, they screwed up A or B. It's what's that old saying? It's not the crime, it's the cover up of the crime that will get you. That's Frankie. She's parsing apart the logistics. And that takes a calm mind frame and it takes an analytic mind frame. And I think for the reader, that's the process that's kind of fascinating. Like, all right, we're in this deserted atoll in the Pacific and terrible things have happened and I don't trust anyone, but there's some certain logistics to what happens next. And that grounds us, the reader, Frankie, in that all of this can be broken apart and, you know, problem solved. That's the journey we all enjoy going on as suspense readers.
And I also know that you can get lost down certain rabbit trails in the research. So is in doing this for 30 years, I mean, that's a lot of research. You know a lot at this point. You've talked to a lot of different people.
I can
So
totally
what
get away
is
with
it that you're
murder. That's what
researching?
you're saying. I don't know what you're talking about, but yes.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. But is that the type of research that you're doing of figuring out those different logistics? Is it focus more now on the different sites, characters. What is it that you're researching now?
It's all of the above. Every book, there's some question I'm trying to answer. Still See You Everywhere has to do with human trafficking, which we all know kind of intellectually is a big issue. But if you start looking particularly against smaller, like Hawaii, so Still See You Everywhere takes place on this remote atoll that's 3 hours by plane flight or 2 weeks by boat out of Hawaii. It doesn't matter. That whole area, human trafficking is unreal. I mean, that's an epicenter for the United States. And we're still trying to wrap our arms around it. And one of our issues, and this is why Frankie gets involved, is we don't even track it appropriately. At any time, the Department of Justice cannot tell you how many female Indigenous Hawaiian women have disappeared, other than we're pretty sure it's a lot. That's a huge weakness. That's what writing and research is to me. It's going down that rabbit hole of, in real life, these are questions we might even know we have, but they're answers we don't have. That's what research enables me to do. And that's what research then enables me as a novelist to bring to you as the reader. This is a real world situation, but in a book, I can take it all the way to the end versus the news will give you 30 seconds that will end with, eh, we don't know. I mean, it's bad. I mean, the situation. And that's what I love about reading, writing, and researching. And I think that's what readers get from my novels. You start with a question, but you end with an answer.
And I think it's also the dichotomy of being a reader of these types of topics when it's part of the storyline. I'm always immersed in the story. It's like, okay, you're so connected to it, but at the same time, you're able to take that step back because you know this is a fictional account, no matter how much research is going into it, that it's like, this is really bad, and you can go find out more. But I can at least remove myself temporarily from this horrible situation.
Sure. I mean, I always think of suspense because I'm still to this day a huge reader. And there's, I mean, I'm also a huge consumer of it in general, whether it's TV shows or movies or whatnot. We the vicarious thrill sitting on the sofa. And it's fun for me because when I'm talking to FBI profilers and people like that, it's not just, you know, what do you do in your job? And what is the nature of evil, which I think is the question we're all trying to answer. But it's also like, what do you think of all of this? And they will tell you, you know, we are looking for resolution. We are looking for, and to a certain extent, you can argue suspense and reading it, watching it, books, TVs, movie. It's almost like a form of preparedness. And there's some psychological studies that have indicated back to this. That's almost like us as without ever leaving our home. Now we know what evil looks like. Now we know what to do. So, when that serial killer finally does attack us, it's okay. We've read books on this subject. We totally got this.
No, I agree. I mean, I remember one of my history teachers in high school, she did a whole section on serial killers. And so, and also, I mean, the Lindbergh kidnapping was a
Yes.
big study point. And
Yes.
again, all, like exactly like you said, it's almost a sense of preparedness of,
Yeah.
oh, this happens, and oh, beware of this. And and of course my house I look at always is like, oh, there's so many zombie weak points here.
Okay, I built an entire house around as a, that, I'm ready for the apocalypse, so I'm not even gonna go there, but I do think there is definitely really, and it's not a secret that if you look at suspense, the majority of the market is women, and it's women of a certain age, and we're looking to feel safe. But I would also argue we're looking for answers, and a really great suspense work gives you answers. This is why certain things happen. This is why phenomenons happen, and this is what you can do. Frankie will tell you, based on Still See You Everywhere, do not go to a remote atoll because a serial killer told you to. That was not one of her better life choices. So I also think we enjoy that as readers. Ha, we knew all right out of the gate. You should not go to a remote atoll if a serial killer tells you to. So see, we get to feel good about ourselves.
Again, it's the answers and the hope that we will make better decisions, right? Well, and also making decisions, you took some time away from writing. Was that, and you did some traveling. I mean, did you find that kind of refilled your writing well? Was that beneficial to the soul? Or was it frustrating because you were away from writing and all the accoutrements that went with it?
Well, it's fun. That year of sabbatical is absolutely what brought you not only Still See You Everywhere, but Frankie's next adventure is in the works. And that also comes from people I met while I did my sabbatical. I am extremely fortunate in my career. I wrote a book at 17, I sold it at 20. But that's also to say, you're talking 33 years later, I've been under deadline and I've been writing. So taking 1 year off was lovely. And I think for any artistic profession, it was kind of one of those refill the well kind of experiences. And one of the experiences I got to have, which influenced Still See You Everywhere, was for totally personal reasons. I went to an extremely remote atoll in the Pacific that you fly to Hawaii and it's 3 hours out of Hawaii. I mean, just to learn about coral reef reclamation, which they're doing a great job of. But within like 24 hours of being on this place where there's only 12 people and the humidity is off the charts, and you have these white sandy beaches and waving palm trees, and it's absolutely paradise. And yet at the same time, it is almost immediately claustrophobic because you can't escape, you can't get out. And you're surrounded by strangers. And you, I mean, what secrets do they have? What are they? I mean, I gotta be honest, within like 2 seconds, I'm like, this is a closed room mystery. And then I was like, oh, I totally have to write this book, which is why I came back from sabbatical.
Well, and I also know that you are wrapping up your book tour for this latest novel. And on a lot of your stops, you were also talking with writers that you yourself are big fans of and read regularly. So what is it like to sit down with, the Karen Slaughters, Tess Gerritsen, Hank Hilby Ryans, and talk to them about your book and see these people that you also read and admire as they are going over things?
Okay, so I tell everyone this. If you ever have the opportunity, hang with the thriller writers at the bar. We are the fun people. We are incredibly collegiate. We love each other's work. There's no one. I mean, tour was amazing. The events were amazing, and all these authors I got to see were amazing. But we genuinely read and love each other's work. And we would tell you, we kill people all day long. We're pretty mellow and relaxed at the end of the day. When we have the opportunity to come together professionally, we're kind of excited to meet other people who have voices in their head telling them to kill. Because funnily enough, our family is not necessarily those people. So we're good. Hang with us, come to our events, read our novels. We are fun people and we love each other because there's just not enough of us running around out in the world who are thinking about murder and how to get away with murder all the time. And yet none of us are actually locked away in any kind of state or federal penitentiary. So yeah.
That's a very strong endorsement. Yes.
I mean, I'm telling you, we are the cool kids at the bar. We have fun. I mean, you will enjoy our company. I mean,
That your daughter's older, you don't have to worry about her teachers and everything thinking, oh no, this woman is crazy with the voices that she hears in her head and regularly trying to murder people. It's fine. It's all good now.
exactly. That's my point. I don't necessarily understand people who don't run around thinking about crime and how to get away with it. And, the good voices in their head, that actually seems weird to me. Not gonna lie.
Well, with that, Lisa, I do want to switch over to what we call our fresh fiction facts, a series of quick, different types of questions, and kind of going off of the voices a little bit, what four people would you most want to sit down with for dinner?
Okay.
Alive, dead, whatever.
Not the easiest question in the world because four is a limiting number, but Agatha Christie is up there. Partly because I also want to ask her about what happened that led her to her disappearing act and ending up at the, what is it, the Swan Hotel in England in Harrogate, because we all now go to that crime festival. But I would still like to know what was the inciting event for her as an extremely and extraordinarily unique female suspense novelist that brought her to that moment. I'm a huge, huge fan of Anne Rule, who sadly passed away. And she's a true crime writer. Her book on Ted Bundy is one, like The Stranger Beside Me is one of the definitive works, I think, in true crime novels, but also my own life. And we once shared a piece of pie, which is also possibly the highlight of my career. So she needs to be there too, because her thoughts, insights, and more contemporarily, what is criminal behavior and the fact that we don't see it. I mean, she was generally friends with Ted Bundy. I mean, she liked him. When I had dinner with her, she was kind of like her kids, was teasing her to that day. Of course, we're messed up, mom. You let Ted Bundy babysit us. And she wasn't lying. I mean, he was good in those circumstances. There were other circumstances that didn't work, but those circumstances were. All right. So we have Agatha Christie, Anne Rule. Well, I mean, who doesn't want Arthur Conan Doyle? If you're a suspense novelist at all, the father of Sherlock Holmes, you should definitely have in the room. And then finally, for four. I feel like we should have someone fun. Oh, wait, do they have to be dead or are they still alive?
Either way.
Okay, I'm going with Karen Slaughter because she goes F this, F that to everything. And her as kind of like the lit match in that kind of room, there would be explosions everywhere. And novelists mostly, we just want to sit back and watch. That would be a good deal of fun.
Very entertaining, yes. How do you unwind after a good or a bad writing day?
Generally, it's hiking or walking of some kind. I live in the mountains of New Hampshire and I have three dogs, and outdoors is my jam.
And when you're doing that, are you able to separate from whatever story is going on in your head? Or is that kind of just still working through things?
It's often still working things because I find walking a form of active meditation. It's often how I come up with the solutions to the problems the book has. But it's also mind clearing too at the same time. It's kind of like whatever I need at that moment. I'm just a mountain and outdoorsy girl.
Which author is your one click buy that you have to go out and make sure you have at least read, if not own, all of their books?
Oh, you are just, that's rude. That list for me is like at least 24, if not 30. But I mentioned Karen Slaughter and Hank Philip E. Ryan. And I would say also Christina, let's talk about new authors, because they're the people we should talk about. Christina McDonald has a series right now I'm mad about, a detective who actually hears ghosts, including her young daughter, which is just haunting and gets to you. And then we have, I had it in my head and then I lost it briefly. Christina McDonald is really good. Tess Garrison is good. Karen Slaughter is good. And then Stacey Willingham, Only If You're Lucky, is one of the most haunting, terrifying reads I've had in forever. S.A. Cosby, with his, what is it, Razorblade Tears and Now All the Sinners Bleed. Really amazing. Simone St. James, who writes thrillers with a touch of horror. Her Murder Road just came out a month ago. If you have not read Murder Road, you need to. I mean, some of the best characters you'll ever read, hands down, and something that resonates for all of us. And I think really good thrillers click something that we already have inside of us, which is that kind of old, like a horror story or ghost story of, you know, the ghost hitchhiker you pick up and bad things happen, except in Murder Road, they pick her up and she is absolutely positively dying. And the whole time they have her in her, they're like, he's coming, he's coming, he's going to get us. He's coming, he's coming, he's going to kill us. If you do not get through the first three chapters of that book and want to read like everything Simone St. James wrote, you're not human.
Wow. Okay. Put that on everyone's TBR list immediately. Yeah, yeah, right?
Yeah. And it should, and you'll be happy. Okay, so I'm a reader too. And mm-hmm. I read Murder Road, I don't know, months ago so I could blurb it. I loved it so much that I went on a 4-week vacation in November and I downloaded a new Simone St. James pretty every much every third, fourth day and was ridiculously, ridiculously happy. Is that not what we want?
Exactly. Yes.
Not only find an author, but there's just like this whole backlist. And now you have an entire month worth of education. I mean, of distraction. I mean, come on, we are readers. That is the best thing in the world. And we all know.
Oh, definitely. If we can find a new to us author with an extensive backlist and we can just immediately dig into it. Fantastic.
And I agree. It's still are. What I'm looking for at this stage of my life. I mean, I was ridiculous. And I mean, I was traveling at the time. And the fact, and this is the other thing I think we love about authors when we discover them. You can go anywhere, you can be any place, and you can read their book and you feel kind of almost like at home again.
Exactly. Okay, those are a lot of new authors. What is your most dog-eared reread copy of a book? The one you constantly go back.
All right. This is an author people don't talk about as much, but she was the queen in her day. MMK, The Far Pavilions. It is kind of an epic 1980s novel of India. And okay. I think it was turned into a mini series and all sorts of crazy, crazy things. Again, we're talking 30 years ago. I don't even know how I found it, but it was probably through my mother. But it's 1,200 pages. It's the doorstopper. It's a kind of like reading Ken Follett. I have probably read those 1,200 pages 9 or 10 times at this point in my life. And what I love about that book is it's everything. It's character driven. It's drama, it's historic. It has some of the most epic battle scenes. It's basically the British losing their hold on India and some really, really tragic, terrible things that happen. I mean, you can argue, well, that was inevitable, whatever. Again, the characters will take you every place in that sweeping historic, saga, the drama of it all and the suspense of it all, because it's not even suspense of a moment. You are following, again, this is the 1980s, a character through like 40 years of pretty extreme moments in their lives. And I still have the book. I could, okay, here we go. I will hold it up for you. You want to see? This is my incredibly dog-eared, like the spine is totally broken and it's mass market and it probably costs like $3.99 at the time. And the print is microscopic by today's standards. But yeah, I have read that thing, I think, 9 or 10 times.
Okay, what luxury item can you not live without?
Oh, I've been through enough storms, been living in the mountains of New Hampshire recently. I'm going to go with Wi-Fi.
Oh,
Because
okay.
I have a generator and electricity is good, but when you have electricity but nothing else to do, it's kind of funny. You're a little lost. And then I was first to say, oh, and yet I have these TPO piles. Maybe there's these things, you open them up, you read the there's words on a page. I mean, but it's funny how much in this day and age already that's like mystifying to us. I mean.
What is one thing that was ruined when it became popular?
Oh, good God. My town, my community, world in general. I don't really like people. I'm just going to go on the record right now. And I'm a worldwide traveler and I go to stranger and stranger places all the time because I don't really like people and they ruin everything. And Galapagos, Machu Picchu, Australia, the South Africa was all about trying to escape people because they, it sounds wrong to say
Well,
that
with all of that, what would be your ideal paradise? Which of those were your favorite?
Oh, that's kind of fun. That's an interesting question. Of all the places I've traveled, and it's been 7 continents now, I'm going to go with Antarctica and the penguins, hands down.
Wow.
Yeah, love them, love them. Penguins are adorable, and you can absolutely positively spend 3 weeks watching penguins and never realize the time has passed.
I love that. Now, you're not going to get more remote than that, probably, and very unique. So, would you rather go back in time to meet your ancestors or travel into the future to meet your descendants?
Oh, back in time.
Back in time.
I like history and I read a lot of historical fiction. Kristen Hanna is one of my all-time favorite authors. Not so interested in the future. It will unfold as it unfolds. The past to me is fascinating because it poses questions we're still trying to answer.
Well, you have given us a little bit of a glimpse into the future, already mentioning the next Frankie book and that there is another one. And as readers, we always want to know what's next. So, what are you working on?
It will be another Frankie. It will come out in March of next year. And some of my travels, which brought you Still See You Everywhere based on this remote atoll I went to, I also met this couple who their volunteer work is helping resettle Afghan refugees in Tucson, Arizona. And let me tell you, that's heartbreaking work. This
Yes.
already is the book I've done the most research for. And a bunch of those interviews, particularly if you're female, have been us crying together. I mean, the stuff that's happened there, the role of women, what happened to women, there's a lot there to unpack. So I think you will all be interested in the next Frankie adventure, which will come out in March 2025, and it's called Kiss Her Goodbye.
I have to keep a lookout. A friend of mine works with Afghan refugees here in the Dallas area.
Oh,
And
great.
so again, it just hearing some of those stories and the lack of what they come with. And yet one of the uplifting activities is as a thank you. A lot of times they are hosting dinners at people's homes where they can share their culture and their cooking experience. And it just really proves to be heartwarming despite everything that they've gone through. And it's helping them with a leg up as they move into their new lives here.
So it's one of the things that's intriguing to me the more I travel is we as a society in the United States have gotten away from this. We are not host material per se. Other parts of the world, this fixing of a meal, sharing, this is our food, this is our tea, this is our culture, this is what we believe in, is still very much intact. And I would argue when I think of my grandparents, my grandmothers, they were very much, that's how they interacted with the world too. My generation, and certainly my daughter's generation, not so much anymore. And it's interesting to me because you learn a lot from a society from sharing a meal and what they eat. Breaking of bread, it still remains to me one of the most basic, substantial, and important human experiences.
And I think you're right too. I mean, and this is taking us in a completely different tangent, but both my grandparents did the same thing. My dad's parents that were definitely stateside, I love their stories of their dinner guests that they would have and that they
Yeah.
traveled to go see. And then on my mom's side, her parents or her whole family immigrated here from Holland. And again, the cultural elements of hosting people and sharing the meals and the stories they would tell. I mean, those are part of my memory tapestry with both sides.
It's
And
been fun for me to write the Frankie books because Frankie travels. So the very first novel before she disappeared is the Haitian community in Boston. So I got to go and spend time there and eat Haitian food. And if any of you are ever bored, you should totally be eating Haitian food. It was absolutely amazing. But then the next book had to do with hiking, which is actually one of my passions. And it's, if you've done, 8,000 vertical feet in a day, any even hydrated lasagna, it will be the best thing you've ever eaten. It doesn't necessarily compare, but I mean, still see you everywhere. You're going to get the re best recipe for poke, tuna poke that you've ever had. And then the next book already with Afghani food, absolutely amazing. We as people, we as cultures, it's kind of a basic thing for how we interact. And it's intriguing to me, and I personally love it, but it's not to be disrespected. This is our culture. This is our heritage. This is what we grew up with. Every single civilization has their comfort food. And that helps you understand who they are. And it also brings us all together because it's intriguing to me. All the comfort foods are somewhat similar. They're heavy on the carbs. And you feel really comforted after eating them. And you need a good nap, as comfort food should be.
Well, Lisa, before we sign off and head over to the happy hour with our readers, one last super important question. Where is the best way for all of us to keep up with you, find out the latest comings and goings, and just find out any type of news?
So I'm across the social media channels on at Lisa Gardner BKS, which is books. You can also visit lisagardner.com, which I highly encourage right now because we just reopened the Kill a Friend, Maim a Buddy sweepstakes. So if you've ever wanted to die in a novel or kill off someone, because I'm looking for people in 2025, they gotta go. Yeah, that's what Kill a Friend, Maim a Buddy is all about. You can only enter once. However, because I'll tell you, it's become highly competitive in the years, you can have all your family, friends, coworkers also nominate you. So the winner first, Still See You Everywhere, 40 different people wrote in for her to die. I mean, you got to respect that level of commitment that this woman's got to meet a terrible end. And I honored that because, that's my job. So go to the website, go to social media, and yeah, nominate yourself or other people to die. It's fun.
See, murder is fun, right there. That is the best way to end the interview.
Yeah,
So
eat
appropriate,
comfort
right?
food and nominate people to die. These are my messages to you. That's, if you remember nothing else from this, that's what you need to know.
Despite that, we still end laughing. So, Lisa, thanks again for joining us this evening. Really enjoyed talking with you, but stick around for the happy hour with our readers.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.